The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Fit and Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get tired of hearing Christians say that America was founded as a Christian country. Well, my friend, it all depends on which part of our history you start with. The Puritans absolutely came to start a Christian colony in Massachusetts Bay. But it wasn't until the War of Independence that we actually became the United States of America, of course. No, this country and this Constitution was not going to force its citizens to be Christians or any other religion. But yes, our Constitution was based upon Judeo-Christian morality. Most of our forefathers were Christians. Some of them may not have passed the evangelical, are you actually born again litmus test, but neither were they the secularists that people make them out to be. Joining me today for this provocative topic is co-host Kevin Conover. Kevin, welcome back to our program.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me again, and I really appreciate it. Looking forward to talking about this. Really big deal. Mojave Cross was recently allowed to stand, so that's exciting news. And
I'm familiar. Is that the same as the Mount Soledad cross?
No,
you're talking about a different.
This is a different cross. The cross out in the middle of the Mojave Desert.
No, I had not heard as much about this one. Yeah. There's cross things everywhere.
Yeah, it's true.
I know there was one in Arizona too. Well, tell us about the Mojave.
Yeah, since 2001, there's been a battle for this cross. At one point in time, the courts required that a cardboard box, cover the cross so nobody could see it. Now, yeah, pretty crazy. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Just when you think it couldn't get even stupider.
Yeah, exactly. But just recently, the past couple months here, it's been vindicated. It is now allowed to stand, and very excited about
now,
that.
Now, did they vindicate it because they said it was no problem? Or I know sometimes people try to say, well, Mount Soledad's just a war memorial.
Well,
but it wouldn't have to be a war memorial to be okay as a Christian cross anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight, is a little bit about this idea that every time we want to defend a cross, we have to make it out that it is not a religious symbol. Primarily, it's a war memorial. And that's exactly how the cross was allowed to stand in the Mojave Desert. It was considered a war memorial. And I think that's maybe that's a temporary solution, but in the long run, I think that's going to fall apart. And our founding fathers didn't intend that any cross on public property had to be a war memorial in order for it to be able to be on public property. And so we're just going to address that tonight with talking about Thomas Jefferson, because he is the one that all secularists, go to whenever they want to make a point that, hey, our country wasn't founded by Christians necessarily. It was founded by deists like Thomas Jefferson. And just want to deal with that tonight.
Do you think, Kevin, the day's going to come where the letter T will be forbidden because it makes kind of a cross?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They'll change it. It'll look different. It'll just be a stick instead.
It wouldn't surprise me. Well, I look forward to hearing some of the things you have to say first. And it's kind of related because we have an annual tradition on the Bob Siegel Show as we approach Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is kind of the commencement of the Christmas season. For the longest time now, we've seen lawsuits about manger scenes and public places and crosses, as you said, or schools that do not have Christmas parties anymore. So it was only a matter of time before religious critics caught up with the other holidays, such as Thanksgiving. And here to tell you all about it is our own Smiley Miley.
Hey, kids. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. And even though the actual holiday is Thursday, we're going to give you Friday off, too. When you add in Saturday and Sunday, it will seem like a four-day holiday. But you would have gotten Saturday and Sunday off anyway, so it's really a two-day holiday made out of a one-day holiday. Isn't Thanksgiving fun? Thanksgiving is a different kind of holiday than Christmas. We don't use the word Christmas anymore because the word offends the five people in our country who don't celebrate Christmas. Not so with Thanksgiving, because no matter what people believe, everybody still loves to eat. So have a great time with your parents around the big dinner table, stuffing your little faces with turkey, pumpkin pie, cranberry sauce, and candied yams. And unlike Christmas, you can even say Happy Thanksgiving to every one of your little playmates. But be careful and make sure you don't tell them who we are being thankful to. Because if you did that, you might have to explain that the first Thanksgiving was made up of pilgrims who were thankful to God. And we don't talk about God anymore because talking about God makes people upset. And it makes them afraid that those who don't believe in God will be arrested and put in jail. That would never happen. But people are still afraid it will happen. And, well, you don't want people to be afraid, do you? Of course not. So don't talk about God unless you want to call him Allah. Then it is okay because people don't worry about being arrested in America for not believing in Allah. They just worry about being arrested in all the other countries if they don't believe in Allah. Now I know what some of you are thinking. What if someone asks me what the first Thanksgiving was all about? How can I explain that without mentioning God? Silly. There are all kinds of things to mention about the first Thanksgiving. You can mention the Mayflower. You can mention the pilgrims, so long as you leave out the part about them coming to America for religious freedom. Because mentioning religious freedom means we will lose our religious freedom. But there's plenty more to talk about. Talk about how wild the original turkeys were. And talk about the Indians who were friendly to the pilgrims. Calling the Indians friendly is always a smart and sensitive thing to do. Only don't use the word Indian. Use the word Native American. Then people will smile at you instead of accusing you of hate speech. Oh, one more thing. If people ask you why Thanksgiving is a holiday, be sure not to tell them that holiday means holy day. Otherwise, you'll have to explain what's holy about it, and we'll be right back where we started. Well, now that you're up to speed on your etiquette and courtesy, Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome in the Christmas season. You're listening to the music of Mannheim Steamroller, some of my favorites. I always start my Christmas bumper music in November, and I'll tell you why. Organizations like the ACLU try to steal our joy every year by getting freaked out over manger scenes with that tired separation between church and state drivel. And so, to make up for all of the aggravation, your old pal Bob has taken the liberty of extending the Christmas season. So enjoy our Christmas bumper music. And if the ACLU is especially persnickety this year, I may just continue the music through January. Say hello again to Kevin Conover.
Hey, how you doing? My website is educateforlife.org, and I teach apologetics, which is Greek for defend. We defend the Bible and the hard questions that are asked about the Bible. And one of those questions that comes up all the time, actually I'm teaching a class right now on this subject, is the idea of separation of church and state, which comes from Thomas Jefferson. And it's claimed that we must keep religion out of all things public. And like I was saying before, the Mojave Cross is recently been vindicated by the Supreme Court. And it's an interesting issue. Today, whenever you argue for a cross to stay on public property, Bob, it comes back to what's called the Lemon Test. This was in 1971. It was a case that was decided that if you want a religious activity to be constitutional, the primary purpose must be secular. It was a case called Lemon versus Kurtzman. And basically, that's why today, every time you see an issue about the Mount Soledad Cross, the Mojave Cross, or any other cross, basically, they're arguing that it's a war memorial. Its primary purpose is secular, not religious.
Well, you know, I think this goes back to two mythologies about our Constitution. One is that the words separation between church and state are found in the Constitution. It's mm-hmm. not. The other myth people don't talk about as much, nowhere in the Constitution does it say that it's the purpose of our courts to interpret the Constitution. So these things like the Lemon Test, the forefathers, A, they didn't imagine that, and B, they didn't imagine that judges would be legislating from the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. And yet today we're constantly told that Jefferson, you know, would not allow a cross to be on public property. A while back, I was up on Mount Soledad during a rally to keep the cross, and I got in a discussion with somebody from the San Diego Coalition of Reason, and she was telling me, hey, this cross needs to come down and so forth. And I said, do you think that the founding fathers today, if they were here, would want that cross to come off of Mount Soledad? Would that be? Now, she didn't answer me directly. She said, immediately accused the founding fathers of being slaveholders.
Well, that's called changing and altering the premise of the argument.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, and not all of them were slaveholders anyway.
Yeah, and she basically was trying to discredit the founding fathers by saying, hey, they're hypocrites. And one of the biggest people attack today is Jefferson. And David Barton recently came out with a book called The Jefferson Lies. I highly recommend it. It is an incredible book.
I'll tell people a little bit about David Barton. He's been on this show before, and you can find him in our archives under guests, but he's a pretty interesting man since you're quoting him as a source.
Yeah, he's a historian, and he has been doing this for a long time. He actually has the largest private collection of founding documents in America
and
today.
And some of the diaries of the forefathers.
Yeah, he has the largest collection of Washington's journals, the originals. And what I really like about David Barton is he uses original sources. He doesn't. He does as much as possible. He avoids secondary sources, and so we can get back to the real history, not depend on what somebody who's interpreting history with a extreme bias against Christianity, like what's happening in our public schools. I mean, even today, I teach at a Christian school. Even at a Christian school, I regularly have students coming up to me saying, hey, Jefferson slept with his slave, and Jefferson was a deist. Jefferson wasn't that good of a person.
Well, and you know, when you get back to this woman that talked to Mount Soledad, who was part of an organization that had the word reason in it.
Yeah.
Whatever she thinks of Jefferson and the forefathers, the minute she tries to tell you that what you're doing is unconstitutional, whether she's right or wrong in the way she cites the Constitution, by citing the Constitution, she's admitting that the forefathers are our authority, whatever they did in their personal life. So it's completely unreasonable and totally inconsistent.
Exactly. Yeah. I tried to point that out to her, but it was a difficult conversation. But
well, when you confuse people with the facts.
Yeah.
I know. Now, I know atheists that are very reasonable. I don't agree with them. But there's others. They're all over the map emotionally. And so for people to talk about reason, they can get pretty emotional at times.
Yeah. And it's very easy to get off track. I wanted to start here by just, we're going to cover a couple different issues tonight. We're going to talk about the idea. This is a very popular myth that Jefferson wrote a Bible, his own personal Bible, where he cuts out the miracles from the Bible, proving that he did not believe in the Bible. Now, the reason that secularists appeal to Thomas Jefferson and this idea is because if they can prove that he was only a deist and not a Christian, they say, hey, he helped frame the First Amendment. Therefore, we know what he intended when he framed the First Amendment. Okay, First Amendment Congress, Bill of Rights, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So what they say is, look it, if we can prove that Jefferson was a deist and not a Christian, we can prove that what he meant when he was framing that, what was going on in his mind, was that he wanted Christianity to have no influence on the public or government.
Okay, now let's back up for one second. Yeah. Because some people are tracking when we use the word deist.
Okay.
Some may not be familiar. A deist today and what a deist was in Jefferson's day are two different things, which is probably where you're going with this. But today, a deist is defined as one who believes in a God, but a God who does not get involved in the personal affairs of people.
Yes.
Who kind of took the universe, wound it up like a watch, and he's just watching. So when people say that Jefferson was a deist, they do admit that he believed in God, but that kind of God.
Exactly. A God that's largely uninvolved. And what we can see if you actually examine history and you examine original source material is that this is not the case at all. This was not at all Jefferson's position.
Well, they said that about Franklin too, and yet Franklin talked a lot about depending on providence. Well, the minute you use a word like providence and depending on it, you're admitting that God's involved in the lives of people.
Absolutely. Benjamin Franklin said, if God cannot miss a sparrow falling to the ground, can he miss an empire rising, okay, without his aid? Okay, and so paraphrase, that's loosely paraphrase. But I wanted to read this quick story here. It's very interesting about Thomas Jefferson. It says here, on one occasion while returning on horseback to Washington, he greeted a passing pedestrian. The stranger did not recognize President Jefferson, but the two began a friendly conversation that soon turned to politics. The man began to attack and deride the president, even repeating several of the lies that had been spread about him. Jefferson was amused, and he asked the man if he knew the president personally. "No," was the reply, "nor do I wish to." "But do you think it's fair," asked Jefferson, "to repeat such stories about a man and condemn one you dare not face?" "I will never shrink from meeting Mr. Jefferson, should he ever come in my way," replied the stranger. Jefferson then promised him that if he would come to the White House at a certain time the next day, that he would personally introduce him to the president. The next day, the stranger appeared for the meeting and was taken to meet President Jefferson. The man was immediately embarrassed and began to apologize. But Jefferson, with a grin on his face, laughed off the apology and extended his hand in welcome greeting. The two then spent several hours in delightful conversation, and when the man rose to depart, Jefferson prevailed on him to stay for dinner.
That's a great story.
Yeah, pretty amazing, and it's true too. You know, and I was in a discussion with a fellow, and he was telling me, "Hey, Jefferson was not a Christian," and we were discussing this book, "The Jefferson Lies" by Barton, and I asked him, "Had he read the book?" And he had not read the book, and yet he continued to say, Barton wasn't trustworthy and so forth and so on. And I said, how can you, and this was a Christian guy. And I said, how can you say that when you have not even read the book?
Well, people do that with the Bible too. Most of the people that put down the Bible have not read it. They may have found some talking points off a website somewhere.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I just wanted, for everybody out there listening, I just want you to, give Jefferson a chance before you condemn him as a deist, and also reconsider what you've learned. There's a lot of things going on in this country. There's a lot of stuff being taught in public schools that's very questionable, and I would challenge you not to outright just disbelieve it, but to really examine it and say, is this true?
You know, Jefferson was being quite Christ-like there because that's what God did. He became a man and roamed the earth and heard people talk about God, and they didn't know they were talking to God. So Jefferson kind of imitated a pretty great thing from our universe.
Yeah, yeah. And he was a nice guy. Jefferson was a nice guy. Besides being just incredibly smart, he was a very nice guy. Let's talk about the first one here. The first lie that Barton reviews, or one of the lies he reviews, is Thomas Jefferson wrote his own Bible and edited out the things he didn't agree with.
Now, I heard he was taking that to some Native Americans and that's why he did the editing. It had nothing to do with his personal beliefs.
That's exactly right. You know, along with Jefferson's history, for example, he was an active member of the Virginia Bible Society, which distributed full Bibles, not any edited Bibles.
See, now that's a pretty fascinating bit of information. This secularist was an active member of the Virginia Bible Society?
Oh, yeah, and that's just the beginning. In 1798, Jefferson personally helped finance the printing of one of America's groundbreaking editions of the Bible. It was a two-volume folio. It was the largest Bible ever published in America to that time, and it was also the first hot-pressed Bible. So he was constantly financing Christian endeavors. The first book he compiled was in 1804 that people consider the Jefferson Bible. First off, there really is no Jefferson Bible. It doesn't exist. Okay, but the first thing that people are usually referring to is something that was composed in 1804. And like you said, it was specifically meant to reach the Indians. And what Jefferson did was he took two Bibles that he had at home, and he basically cut out all the words of Jesus and compiled them into a kind of a primer or a reader.
Now, would that have included Jesus' many statements about the afterlife?
Absolutely.
And his comments after he did miracles?
Exactly.
Okay, now that's very interesting, because usually the conventional wisdom is he just took out the morality of Jesus, but you're saying he even took out he even included in his Bible the supernatural element of Jesus.
That's absolutely correct. It didn't take out any of the miracles. It didn't take out the stuff about the afterlife. It didn't take out stuff about hell, as is commonly said. It only took out the words of Jesus because, according to Thomas Jefferson, Christ had the most pure morality that there was. And so he wanted the Indians to be able to read the direct words of Christ and to gain their morality from Christ's teachings. So that's his first publication. That was composed in 1804, and he actually had the federal government pay to make copies of it to distribute to the Indians. So no separation of church and state there.
And which Indian tribe was this?
This was the...
Oh, it doesn't matter if you don't have it in front of you.
I have it, but give me a chance to look it up. Anyway, the second one was published in 1820, it wasn't published, but he made it in 1820. And the second one was similar to the first one, but it was only for Jefferson's private use. So basically what he did was he was comparing the different philosophies of, for example, Plato, Socrates, and Christ. He put them all up against Christ, and he wanted to compare them and see which was the best. And so this was for his own private use, and that's where that came from. And that's where the whole thing about the Jefferson Bible comes from. Now, of course, Barton goes into incredible detail on that, and it's very interesting. A lot of people will ask, well, then how did it become public? What happened? But basically, in 1886, a guy named Adler, he was a librarian for the Smithsonian. He located the original of Jefferson's book and arranged for its purchase by Congress in 1890.
Now, this is the original of the second book or the book?
The second book. They don't have any more of the 1804 book was completely lost.
Okay, and what was – I know that the purpose of the second book was different, but what was different regarding the content of the second book as compared to the first?
The second book was bigger. It had more things in it. It wasn't just the words of Jesus. It had more.
So it still included the supernatural elements and the discussions of heaven and the afterlife.
Exactly.
Okay.
It included all kinds of things from the afterlife and miraculous. For example, it had in it the resurrection of Jairus' daughter in Matthew. It had forgiving of sins of men and women by Christ, you know, emphasis on him being God. Let's see. It also had other passages about hell. Okay. It had from Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 25, which is the healing of the bleeding woman. Has Matthew chapter 9, verses 20 through 22, which is the healing of the two blind men. So it was just on and on about the miraculous. And the idea that he specifically removed the miracles because he didn't believe in the miraculous, it's just pure myth. It's a lie. It's not real.
Well, and you know, in one of his journals, he wrote, "I am a real Christian, that is to say a disciple of the doctrines of Jesus Christ." I would think that by doctrines, he means not just the moral teachings, but the beliefs that Jesus also...
Yes, absolutely. You know, and now there were changes throughout Jefferson's life about what he believed. Make no mistake, he, especially towards the end of his life, you know, there's some things that turned up, and he for example, rejected at one point the doctrine of the Trinity. So was he... not in line with Orthodox Christianity in some parts. Yeah, it's true. He was. That wasn't for his entire life, but that was definitely...
You're saying he returned... Was he still believing in the Trinity? Did he return to the Trinity when he passed away? Or are you saying he had started believing in the Trinity and then stopped?
No, I'm saying he started believing in the Trinity towards his latter years.
Oh, towards his latter years.
Towards
okay.
his latter years, That's he actually turned away from that. And the big, as far as Barton is explaining it, the main reason he did this was because he wanted to, there was a movement to get back to the essentials of Christianity. And what was happening at that time was, they called it a return to primitivism. And what they were trying to do was get back to just biblical Christianity. A lot of people were tired of all the denominational arguments. And so what happened was they said, we're only going to believe what's in the Bible. And the argument came up, well, the Trinity, the word Trinity, is not specifically in the Bible.
Not the word, but the teaching of the Trinity is in the Bible.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all over the Bible.
God's not obligated to put our titles on his doctrine.
Exactly. But sadly, that was a misunderstanding at the time, that despite the fact that, quote unquote, Trinity, the word, is not in the Bible, it's still taught in the Bible.
Now, I know that Ben Franklin at least expressed that he wasn't sure about the deity of Christ. Did he remain that way his whole life, just kind of... uncertain? I know he believed in a personal God too.
Yeah, my understanding is that he was he leaned further deist, quote unquote deist, than did Thomas Jefferson. Although I would say honestly, I doubt that even Benjamin Franklin was what we would define as a deist today. Thomas Jefferson absolutely was not. He was he was no atheist. He was no agnostic. He was no deist. He was very pro Jesus, pro Christian. And
you know, what's interesting is whatever they believed about Christianity, we know they believed Christianity was very good for the country. And that's probably the most important thing when we're talking about this alleged separation between church and state.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. The founding fathers knew that our country depended upon Christianity to do well. Jefferson himself was all over that. Jefferson... When he was vice president, he attended services in the White House. That's what he had the Marine Corps band lead worship in the White House. For 8 years of his own presidency, he attended worship in the White House. Okay, and that's all that can all be confirmed using original source material. So anyway, I just wanted to clear up that lie that the Jefferson Bible, first of all, does not exist. Now do your own research, you know. Don't just believe me. Do your own research. But the reality is that the Bible written in 1804, it's not a Bible, the primer written in 1804 by Jefferson and the one written in 1820 were meant for the Indians to benefit from, and then the other one was meant for Jefferson
just for
to
himself
benefit
from. Personally.
That's
yeah,
right.
And he'd
mm-hmm.
probably be embarrassed to think that people are using it as some kind of excuse. Hey, I'm here with my co-host Kevin Conover, the real teachings of the Founding Fathers, particularly keying in on Jefferson, and we will be right back.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined today by my co-host, Kevin Conover. We constantly hear from people that Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were deists, deists being people that believed in an impersonal God. And we're showing that they really weren't. I have here, Kevin, a quote from Benjamin Franklin. He says, "The soul of man is immortal and will be treated with justice in another life, respecting its conduct. These I take to be the fundamental points in all sound religion." Now, that doesn't sound like a deist view to me. Again, I don't think they would have passed an evangelical litmus test, but they certainly believed in a providential God involved in the affairs of the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but they encouraged and expected it to be a part of our society. They believed that our society actually depended upon it. You know, you can either have people rule you from the outside, or you can have God rule you from the inside.
And they believed in an inner check, what we would call the Holy Spirit. But they believed that there was something inside of us in our conscience.
Absolutely. And Thomas Jefferson believed in the Holy Spirit. You know, Thomas Jefferson was the governor of Virginia, and many times he gave a call for prayer. His own pastor, he called to pray for Virginia, okay, especially when they were dealing with the issue of slavery. And I want to talk a little bit about that here next. There's also another popular lie out there that Thomas Jefferson slept with his slaves.
I heard that was started by some political enemy of his, and
yes,
that it was never, ever substantiated.
Yes, he had many political enemies. And the reason he had political enemies, which, you know, sometimes we look at Obama versus Romney and what happened in the previous election here, and we think, wow, that was pretty vicious.
Like the lie smear campaign that defeated Romney?
Yeah. But what Thomas Jefferson faced was incredible. I mean, people called him a murderer. They called him an atheist, which back then was basically a political suicide.
Can you imagine a time in America when being called an atheist would be an insult?
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, those were the days.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that they did smear him with was, hey, he slept with his slave, Sally Hemings, and therefore he can't be trusted. He's an immoral person. And this is perpetuated today. And again, the reason this is perpetuated is because if they can defraud Thomas Jefferson and show that he was hypocritical, even if he was a Christian, then you can't trust him. And we don't want to base our country off of a belief system where you have that kind of hypocrisy.
And yet these same people would say they could trust Clinton and Kennedy. And
yeah, well, that brings up an interesting point when you bring up Clinton, because in 1998, the journal Science released the results of the DNA inquiry into whether Jefferson had fathered any children through his slave, Sally Hemings. Interestingly enough, this was happening right at the time where Clinton was being threatened with impeachment for his own personal sexual issues, and so with Monica Lewinsky. And so when it came out, it was published that the DNA testing had conclusively proved that Thomas Jefferson fathered Hemings' child. Now, the lawyers in the case defending Clinton, what they did was they actually used that DNA test to say, hey, listen, if somebody like Thomas Jefferson, who founded our country, had promiscuity in his past and was still able to be our president, then Clinton can too. Do you see that?
Sure, I slept with her in the fine tradition of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's crazy about it is 2 weeks following that announcement, 221 news articles were printed repeating that claim that Jefferson had fathered a child by Sally Hemings. Okay, now what most people don't realize is that this was completely repudiated. Okay, 8 weeks after the initial blockbuster DNA story was issued, it was retracted. It was retracted. Okay, the guy who did the testing, the DNA testing, announced that it actually had not proven that Jefferson fathered any children with Hemings. Okay, but of course, this didn't get around. Nobody knew about it, didn't make the front page of any newspapers, wasn't published in 221 new articles. Hey, sorry, we were wrong. Okay, Nature issued a retraction, and they said, our study was misleading. Why? Because no DNA sample from Thomas Jefferson's family line actually was used in the testing.
I heard they were even talking about exhuming his body and trying to test it from the bones. I know they never did that, but they were discussing that.
Well, the report okay, basically said, Tom, okay, was born, the kid who was supposed to be Thomas Jefferson's right. son, was born in 1790, okay, after he had returned from France with Sally Hemings. But basically what ended up happening is they proved the DNA data did rule out completely that Thomas Jefferson was the father of Thomas Woodson, okay, and shed no light on. Now, they said that he also fathered another child, okay, but basically he would have had to have been 65 to have had Sally Hemings' last child, which is the other one that they claim to have had. Now, is it possible? Well, I suppose it's possible, but it's kind of unlikely. And 13 scholars actually got together to evaluate this, and they ended up deciding that it was much more likely, much more plausible that Thomas Jefferson's youngest brother was the one who did have a child by Sally Hemings.
That's interesting.
Not Thomas Jefferson himself.
Yeah, now that doesn't mean that he wasn't a flawed man, and he did own slaves, but a lot of people, Kevin, don't seem to understand that he was very tortured by his own personal slaveholdings and financially didn't know how to get out of it. Wrote against slavery, even wrote an anti-slavery clause in the Declaration of Independence that got struck, probably because the Southern colonies wouldn't have gone along with it. So, you know, these are still flawed human beings. To make angels out of them or demons out of them is going too much of an extreme in either direction.
Yeah, that's completely true. You know, I had a discussion with somebody, and he was saying, hey, look, why are you trying to make Thomas Jefferson look like an angel? He's not an angel, okay? He was a normal person. But, you know, sometimes we look at our own fallen selves and we project who we are onto other people, not recognizing that oftentimes there are people out there who are very, very honorable and full of integrity. And I said to the fellow, I said, look, you know, there are people out there who are like Daniel from in the Bible. You know, he was told, don't pray. And what did he do? He prayed anyways, even with the threat of death and going to the lions. Okay, there are people, you know, and hopefully that's you and me, who have so much integrity that they're willing to die to do what's right. And I said, listen, if Thomas Jefferson was the kind of person who would sleep with a slave, then so be it. Okay, he was. But if he wasn't, why are we going to try to make him out to be less than he was? You know, if he really was a righteous man who did what was right, then I don't want to defraud his name when there's no evidence that he was actually this person you're claiming he was.
And he was at least enough like Daniel to put his life on the line, because every signer of the Declaration of Independence knew that the British could catch them and hang them.
That's exactly right. Okay. Now people say, like you said, hey, why didn't Jefferson release his slaves if he was so free to do so? And if he was so anti-slavery, why didn't he do that? Well, the reality is, okay, even though George Washington was able to release his slaves, the answer is Virginia law, like you brought up. In 1799, Virginia allowed owners to emancipate their slaves on their death. So basically it was, Jefferson, when you die, then you can emancipate your slaves. But in 1826, state laws had been changed to prohibit that practice. Okay? The law said, no mulatto or Negro slave shall be set free unless the emancipator pays for his transportation out of the country within 6 months. Okay, subsequent laws imposed even harsher restrictions, mandating that a slave could not be free unless the owner guaranteed a full security bond for the education, livelihood, and support of the freed slave.
And contrary to popular opinion, Jefferson was not wealthy his entire life. His fortune kind of came and went depending on how his plantation was doing.
Well, not only that, but he received his slaves by inheritance. He had 187 slaves. Okay, and this was when he was a little kid. He was 14 years old. Okay, so the reality is he could not pay to release all these slaves. But not only that, but Virginia law required that if you did emancipate a slave, the slave had to leave Virginia right then. Now,
and how safe would they have been traveling to other places anyway? Well, even in a non-slave state, there would have been a lot of racism and persecution.
Well, that's absolutely true. But not only that, they would have to leave anybody they knew. Can you imagine being told you're going to have to leave if you're freed? You're not going to be able to see any of your family. You're not going to be able to see any of these people. All the people you know, you're going to have to just leave.
Well, isn't it also true that hindsight is 20/20? I mean, we look back and we say slavery was a horrible practice, mm-hmm. and yet when you go and look at Roe v. Wade and compare it to the Dred Scott decision, Roe v. Wade was ruling that an unborn child is the property of the mother to do with as she wants based on the size and the shape. We're determining whether it's a real human being.
It's a form of slavery, but people don't view it that way today. They may view it that way 100 years from now and look back at this as a very bleak time in American history.
Yeah, completely. I mean, we have 53 million abortions, more than 53 million abortions done. And, you know, we go along living our lives, and people in history, maybe when abortion is legal, will look back and go, how could they have done that?
Absolutely. But we get used to things. Mm-hmm. You know, if you walk into a room with a stench, after a couple of hours, you don't smell it as much because you're used to it.
That's right. And, you know, to add to this, just to prove that Jefferson was so anti-slavery, in 1784, Jefferson returned to service in the Continental Congress. He introduced a provision to end slavery in every territory that would eventually become a state in the nation. His proposal stated that after the year 1800 of the Christian era, there shall be neither slavery nor involuntary servitude in any of the said states. The crazy thing is, Jefferson's law fell one vote short of passage. He said there were 10 states present, 6 voted unanimously for it, 3 against it, and 1 was divided. And 7 votes being requisite to decide the proposition affirmatively, it was lost. You know, and, you know, we look at the same thing today. Here we are trying so hard, working so hard to get Romney elected, who is going to, you know, he said he's going to work on getting abortion made from a federal standpoint illegal. It would be left up to the states, but it didn't happen. And a lot of Christians voted for Obama, even though Obama is pro-abortion.
And a lot of those Christians were against abortion and still voted for Obama. And so how will history judge them?
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, that's a difficult place to be in. Thomas Jefferson was in an incredibly difficult place, but he was adamantly against slavery.
Now, isn't it also true that people are always associating him with the Constitution? He did draft the Declaration of Independence, but he was actually in France when the Constitution was passed anyway. Now, I know they modeled some of it off of the Virginia Constitution, and certainly he was influential. But isn't it interesting? He's always the first name people use when they want to invoke their interpretation of the First Amendment, and yet he was not actually here passing it.
Yes, that's exactly right. For both the First Amendment and the Constitution, Jefferson was in France during that entire time, and he was not involved in framing the First Amendment. And yet people use his phrase, separation of church and state.
Which was from a letter.
Yes.
Now, why don't you go ahead, Nick? So I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but tell our audience again that his letter to the Danbury Baptists, this was when the phrase separation between church and state was first used, and explained to them what that meant and why Jefferson even wrote that.
Yeah. So basically what happened was the Danbury Baptists of Connecticut were super excited that Jefferson had been elected. He was a anti-federalist. Okay. He did not want the federal government to have ultimate power. And they were very excited about that because they felt that when the federal government got too much power, it would begin to dominate their religious beliefs, what they could do. And they were very excited, but they were also nervous. And the reason they were nervous was they felt that if the government even made a statement about their religious beliefs, that it would be an indication that the government was granting them their freedom of religion. And they said, we don't even want the government to make a statement about it.
Because if the government can grant it, that same government might think it could take it away.
That's exactly right, yes.
Okay, I'm here with Kevin Conover, and we're talking about our forefathers, mostly Thomas Jefferson, trying to deal with some of the mythology about them and clear it up. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Kevin Conover discussing Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, so Thomas Jefferson is, you know, the more I've read about him, the more I'm just like, man, I really like this guy. He was an amazing man and really did love the Lord, loved people. And, you know, another one of the lies that's perpetuated out there is that he started the first secular college. I won't spend a lot of time on this one, but basically the reason people say he started the first secular college is because he started the first college that was not linked directly to a denomination.
Now, which college was this?
This is the University of Virginia.
And that, okay, so they allegedly called it, I'll bet you there were all kinds of Bible classes in that college, whether they called it a denomination or not.
Well, you know what was...
I bet they led with prayer every day.
Well, they did. And what's really interesting about it is that he actually asked all the denominations to come. And so people say it was secular because it wasn't linked directly to one denomination, but he invited ministers from every denomination.
In other words, because it was more Christian than people that want to be tied to just one denomination, that made it secular.
That's exactly right.
Brilliant. Yeah. That's flawless logic.
Yeah. And so, I mean, do your research on that. But basically, it's amazing. This guy was actually, in some ways, a more committed to Christ than some other people, in the sense that he didn't want there to be this fighting between denominations. And his hope was that because they were all on the same campus, they would actually learn to appreciate each other and get along better and stop bickering over all these little differences. And so that's pretty amazing. This is a quote from Thomas Jefferson. He said, "No nation has ever yet existed or been governed without religion, nor can be. The Christian religion is the best religion that has been given to man, and I, as chief magistrate of this nation, am bound to give it the sanction of my example." When somebody was asking him about his why he was so consistently going to church, and he wanted to be a role model, unlike many people today who say, "Hey, I'm famous, but I don't want to be a role model," or I'm a leader, but I don't want to be a role model. He knew that he had a responsibility to be an example to the rest of them about why he was so consistent going to church.
Well, and you know, the last time you were on our show, you were talking about a republic and how, you know, they have a republic in Saudi Arabia. The USSR called itself a union of Soviet republics. The morality behind the republic is everything, or it's not a good republic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you have a pure democracy, you basically have a country that is governed by the whims of the masses, which is dangerous. I mean, that's how you can have slavery legal. When you say, hey, let's vote for slavery, which is what the South was doing, then you can have horrible, horrible things. Or you can vote that Jews are not humans, right? In Nazi Germany, it was a vote. You know, they voted Hitler into office. It was a democracy before it became a dictatorship. And so democracies are not a good thing. What we need is a country that is based on the rule of law, a republic, combined with a democracy.
And combined with a morality, because otherwise the republic could make stupid decisions.
That's right. And so our republic is founded on Christianity, and this is why we have such incredible laws. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. All men are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. Okay, and that we're all created equal. Thomas Jefferson isn't pulling this from the Quran, okay, which does not teach that. He's not pulling this from Hindu scriptures, okay, which does not teach that. He's not even pulling this from, you know, any sort of atheistic philosophies. He's pulling this directly from the Bible, and that's what our country's values are based on. And it needs to stay that way in order for our country to continue to do well. Because if it doesn't, and you lose that, and you begin to be able to vote on morality, you're going to have all kinds of things become legal that you don't really want legal. And so anyway, I wanted to just list a couple more things that Thomas Jefferson did while he was in office. By 1867, the church that he was holding in the Capitol had become the largest church in Washington. Okay. He also urged the commissioners of the District of Columbia to sell land for the construction of a Roman Catholic church. Okay. He also wrote a letter to Governor Morris, who was a U.S. senator, telling him, "We are already about the seventh largest Christian nations in population, but we hold a higher place in substantial abilities," saying it was a good thing. He signed federal acts setting aside government land so that missionaries might be assisted in propagating the gospel among the Indians. He did that in 1802, 1803, and 1804. He directed the Secretary of War to give federal funds to a religious school established for the Cherokees in Tennessee. He negotiated and signed a treaty with the, I don't know if I'm saying this right, the Kaskaskia Indians that directly funded Christian missionaries and provided federal funding to help direct a church building in which they might worship. And he assured a Christian school in the newly purchased Louisiana Territory that it would enjoy the patronage of the government.
So federal funding for religious purposes. Now, our First Amendment doesn't really restrict that. It just says Congress shall make no law concerning the establishment of a religion.
Exactly. And that's why a cross is not unconstitutional on public property. It doesn't establish a national religion. You know, we have the reason that today people are so freaked out when somebody prays in front of an opening session of, let's say, Congress or any other political thing in our government is because of the establishment test, which was started in 1947, Everson versus Board of Education. And basically what it did was it took the Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, and it applied it to the states, okay, using the 10th Amendment. What it did was it took out the word Congress and said a state shall make no law respecting an establishment.
Yeah, and actually states were allowed to pick their own religions under our Constitution anyway. I may not agree with that, but it is interesting that the states could have a state church. It was just federally. We weren't going to have a federal church.
That's exactly right. And so the people need to recognize that there's nothing wrong with religious activity taking place on public property. The Mojave Cross does not need to be called a war memorial in order to stay up there. Neither does the Mount Soledad Cross. And the sooner we understand the history of our Constitution and what the Founding Fathers intended, the sooner we'll be able to make the case and argue the case and have that freedom again without having to embarrassingly say that cross doesn't mean anything. It's just a war memorial.
Well, and the alleged separation never cuts both ways anyway. Look what our kids are being taught in public schools. Look what happens when you get to state-sponsored universities that teach atheism, that sometimes rip into Christianity. Well, I thought that wasn't the arena to talk about religion, but if they're talking about it negatively, then that's okay. And yet our tax dollars go to pay for beliefs that we don't have as Christians.
That's right. Thomas Jefferson told Benjamin Rush, to the corruptions of Christianity, I am indeed opposed. What he was saying was, when a minister uses Christianity for his own purposes, selfishly, greedily to get ahead, he said, I'm opposed, but not to the genuine precepts of Jesus himself. This is a direct quote from Thomas Jefferson. I am a Christian in the only sense in which he wished anyone to be, sincerely attached to his doctrines in preference to all others.
And so, that's key in preference to all others.
Yes.
Because that's not this general gods in all religion views.
No, not at all.
The doctrine of Christ specifically.
Absolutely. And, you know, the whole point I wanted to talk about tonight was I want to just dispel these myths that Jefferson was a deist, that he was a hypocrite and slept with his slave, that he owned slaves and didn't apply equality to his slaves. He did. You know, that he was a secularist. This just is not true. He was not a deist. He was not an agnostic. He was not an atheist. He was a Christian. He followed Christ. He believed in Christ. He read the Bible probably more than most Christians do today, and did his best to promote Christianity.
He probably read the Bible more than the secularists have read the Constitution. Well, I believe and hope that he'll resurrect, because I know that in the meantime, he's just turning in his grave over the things people are saying about him.
Yeah, so I just recommend that book, The Jefferson Lies by David Barton. It is fantastic. It's easy to read, too. It's not a stressful read. So, you know, if the audience out there gets a chance to pick it up, I highly recommend it.
Okay, go ahead and give out your website again, Kevin.
It's educateforlife.org, and we'll be starting new classes in January. Love to have people sign up if you're interested. We have a variety of different classes on very interesting issues that you'll learn a ton and be able to articulate the truth about Christianity.
And his students absolutely love him. People love this guy. I've read some of their comments to him. Kevin and I are Facebook friends. His students just love him. So if you wanted to send your teenager to the school, you're not going to be unhappy about that. We will see you next week. Kevin, always great having you here.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.
Thank you very much, Bob.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.